Willie and D Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mace, and Nick Frazier here with you on Tuesday afternoon. We are roughly 3 hours from the cutoff for teams to complete their 53-man rosters around the NFL. 3 p.m. Central is the deadline. We will continue to monitor the news.
Tick, 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 tick,
to
tick,
bring,
tick.
Yes. We will continue to monitor the news. So far, only one Titans cut that we have seen. Caleb Farley, unsurprisingly. But unfortunately for Caleb Farley, as Derek said, has gone through a lot, both professionally and personally. Has been cut by the Tennessee Titans. So that's the only cut that I have seen so far. In addition to the cuts that were made on Monday, 9 players were waived by the Titans on Monday. Linebacker JoJo Doman, wide receiver Treshawn Harrison, offensive tackle Brian Dooley, defensive back Tay Gowan, linebacker Michael Jones, linebacker Thomas Rush, wide receiver Sam Schnee, tight end Steven Stylianos, and punter Ty Zentner. Those were 9 players waived by the Titans yesterday. So you can add Caleb Farley to that list. So we have some cuts. We're waiting for them. But as we wait for those cuts, I ask this question to you, Derek and Willie. Which position should we keep our eye on? Of the cuts that are still to come, is there a specific position that intrigues you as to what the Titans might do as we wait for the cutdown deadline at 3 p.m. Central?
I'm looking at the receiver position, because all those guys, frankly, all those guys have balled out at one point during camp. You know, you saw this past weekend, what a few of the receivers did, were able to do, the kid that caught a touchdown from Malik Willis, I forget his name.
Michael number 80. Oliver?
80. Oh, Bryce Oliver.
Yeah, Bryce Oliver. He balled out in the last game. You had Jackson ball out. Mason Kinsey been doing this thing. I think the only guy that really hasn't shown up as much is Mason. It's Kyle Phillips. That's probably the one guy that really hadn't shown up. So I'm watching that position, and I think there could possibly be a trade in there. And I mentioned that to you guys yesterday in regards to Treylon Burks. I love Treylon Burks. I hope he can, you know, stake his claim as a player for this franchise. But I am not going to be naive to think that they wouldn't trade him if somebody put something on the table that was worth making a move. Because we're, you know, once D-Hop comes back, I thought that with D-Hop gone, trading was going to get an opportunity to take that step forward, catch some passes. We see what he really looks like. He did extremely well in practice. In the game, it didn't show up as much. Maybe the opportunities were not there. I think he ended up catching like 2 passes in 2 games. So I looked at it from the standpoint of if he's going to really take that step, he has to show somehow, some way that he's ready. I'm not saying that he isn't, but I think there is a possibility with D-Hop coming back, them reassessing where they are from a wide receiver standpoint, and if D-Hop is fully healthy, I think somebody may come by and offer them something that they probably can't refuse, and they send Treylon on his way. Not because they want to, but because whatever they're getting back in return is something they can't pass up.
The question I have is, we saw a trade last week involving a first-round wide receiver who was taken two spots ahead of Treylon Burks in the draft, Jahan Dotson. The Washington Commanders traded Jahan Dotson and a 5th-round pick to the Eagles for a 3rd-round pick and 2 7ths. So Jahan Dotson, like Treylon Burks, first-round receiver, as I said, chosen 2 spots ahead of Treylon Burks in their draft. Dotson in the 5th for a 3rd and 2 7ths. Do you think there is a team out there who views – Jahan Dotson is going to be the 3rd receiver in Philadelphia, right, behind A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Do you think there is a team out there that could value Treylon Burks the same way the Eagles value Jahan Dotson and trade multiple picks for Treylon Burks before the start of the season?
Wow.
Is there a team? Ooh.
I would be surprised. I have not really looked at Dotson's production over the last couple of years, and so I would probably need to reference that a little bit more before I compared what Dotson is now value-wise as opposed to Burks. But I would say that I'm still in the exploratory phase in my mind. If I'm Carthon and Callahan, I want to see Burks in this system for a year. Unless somebody really hits me with value like that, essentially, you're right, you're getting a third. You're getting an extra third round pick, and you're giving up on a guy you picked in the first round. And of course, Rand Carthon was not the guy that made the pick, so it's probably a little easier. It's probably not a pick that he's emotionally tied to, but I still feel like Burks has done enough in the preseason, and he has made it to day one healthy, which hasn't happened before, right? He's going to start, and he might even be your starting guy if D-Hop is not ready to go. So I'd like to take a look at that, really, unless there is an offer that I can't refuse. I'd be surprised if that kind of offer's out
there. So Jahan Dotson, in two seasons with the Commanders, 84 receptions for 1,041 yards and 11 touchdowns. He had 7 receiving touchdowns in his rookie season, 4 in his sophomore season. So 11 career receiving touchdowns in two seasons, 84 receptions, 1,041 yards.
So clearly significantly more productive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which tells you that Burks would not have that value, probably on paper.
No, but it's funny that you mentioned that because I shared this article with you guys yesterday. Bill Barnwell at ESPN.com had a story about NFL trade candidates, players who could change teams before the deadline, and he mentioned Treylon Burks as one of those players. He also mentioned Caleb Farley, who, as we know, has been cut. So this is part of what Barnwell wrote about Treylon Burks. Quote, as we saw with Dotson, though, Burks should have some trade value given his salary. With the Titans having already paid most of his rookie deal out via a signing bonus, he is on the books for only about $4.3 million combined over the next two seasons. That's not much by NFL standards. The acquiring team would even have the leverage of a fifth-year option if he did break out in a larger role. Should teams expect a superstar? Of course not. Could he be more if he ends up with better quarterback play or in a more pass-friendly scheme? I suspect the team will be willing to find out for the right price. That was Barnwell yesterday on Treylon Burks.
I look at teams like the Jets. They really don't. They have no depth at their receiver position.
I don't even know who their second receiver is after Garrett Wilson.
Mike Williams.
Oh, Mike Williams.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I think it is.
I feel like he's held together with.
Yeah,
duct tape
he's
at all, this
he's
point.
Always hurt. Yes. So you can't count on him to finish. Yeah, Mike Williams is the starter. They got Xavier Gibson, who they drafted. Alan Lazard, who hasn't shown up for them.
What about the Steelers?
The Steelers, they just cut Martavius Bryant.
I know there's been some. There have been plenty of rumors about the Steelers and Brandon Ayuk.
Right.
Not comparing Burks and Ayuk. They're in a different class. But if that falls through, would the Steelers take a gamble on Treylon Burks?
I don't.
But for what? Like a seventh rounder? Or is that
would
what
have
we're
to
about?
Be?
So if we all agree that Jahan Dotson has been clearly more productive over the start of his career than Burks. Burks is not going to fetch as much as Dotson did.
Yeah.
So what do you think we're looking at as a legitimate return on a trade for Treylon Burks? At
I
this
would
point?
Say
a fifth round pick.
At best,
maybe conditional.
A conditional, maybe a fourth. It turns into a fourth. I can't see much. Teams will give up much to get him. I guess it's just, you know, you not wanting to cut him. Round pick, a fifth round pick is still a good pick because you could potentially package that with another pick and move up to a round that you want to be in. If you want to be in the second round, then you can package picks together to try to move up within the second round or move into the second round. I look at teams like the Cardinals, Arizona. Other than Marvin Harrison Jr., they don't have much of a receiving core there. You look at who else? The Bills. What did their receiving core looks like? I know they went out and got Keon Campbell, Coleman. They drafted him, and they have the kid out of Ohio State that's been in the league for, what, 6-7 years. But their receiving core doesn't have any depth. So there are teams.
Are you referring to Curtis Samuel?
Yeah, Curtis Samuel.
Yes, Curtis Samuel.
There are teams out there that need a number two or number three wide receiver. It's if they're willing to give up the pick. Maybe it's a fourth. Maybe it's a fifth. Are teams willing to give that up to get a Treylon Burks?
An interesting note here as it relates to something Titans adjacent from Rob Demofsky, who is the ESPN NFL Nation Packers reporter. So think of him as the Green Bay version of our friend Teron Davenport. The Packers are releasing both Sean Clifford and Michael Pratt. Sources
releasing
confirmed.
Both.
Releasing both Sean Clifford and Michael Pratt. We'll see if either returns in some capacity, perhaps on the practice squad if they clear waivers. But for now, it's Jordan Love and Malik Willis.
So Willis makes the 53. The other two, they are rolling the dice. They believe that it'll be easily. One guy's, what, a seventh-round pick, rookie. I think that's a natural fit on a practice squad.
Mm-hmm. And the other guy was a later-round pick, too.
Clifford, yeah, I don't know what they'll do with him. But it's interesting for a team that's trying to win. And I think the Packers have a very good young team, high expectations. You got the Lions in that division. But people think they could win double-digit games, maybe more. They were only 9-8 last year. Let's not forget, right? They had to make a late run, and then they looked great in the playoffs and almost won in San Francisco. So expectations are high. And they went into the season with those two guys that they just cut as their backups. It's kind of surprising.
Right, yeah, it there. Is. Now, what position are you two guys looking at? I said the receiver position.
Yeah. Linebacker for Burks. Linebacker. Okay. And obviously, if you can find an offensive lineman.
Yeah, you're going to have to find a few
that
of them.
Bill Callahan likes, I'm sure he's scouring. They have a good waiver position, right, that they can use. But we talked about it yesterday. In the wake of losing Chance Campbell for the year and given a couple other young guys, depth guys are banged up, I think a veteran inside linebacker could be a fit. Maybe there's a guy that Denard Wilson has come across in the past or some guys on the coaching staff. I'd be keeping an eye out there. Linebacker wise.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Linebacker. It sucks for Chance Campbell. Like, he had such a great preseason, and to lose your season in the preseason, really tough news for Chance Campbell. But I would agree with Willie. The linebacker position is one that I will be keeping my eye on over the next couple
also
of hours.
Also, watch the defensive back room, who they cut, who they choose to keep, who they put on practice squad. Because we discussed this yesterday with TD. Those guys that are backing up Owuzie and Snead and McQuarrie. Even I like Brownlee. I think he's going to be a player. He's just young right now. He's still trying to figure it out. But besides that, they don't have any depth on the back end. So to me, they're going to have to bring in guys that have played some snaps in this league, guys that are veteran guys. That if one of these, you know, if one of these guys go down, one of your starters go down, that you can, you know, just easily place that guy in there. Will he be a Cheeto or Snead? No, but he has the experience that you need at that position, so you don't completely, you know, lose whatever momentum you had, you know, at the cornerback position. So that's another group to watch at the cornerback position, because I don't think they have much depth. Beside Brownlee Jr., I don't think they have much depth.
Another quarterback released in the NFL. The Lions are releasing Nate Sudfeld. Nate Sudfeld out. Hendon Hooker has won the backup quarterback job.
That's
with
Northwestern,
the Detroit Lions.
Right?
Sudfeld? That yeah. sounds right. Northwestern. It sounds right.
Man, this is a good quiz today of where did this guy go to college?
I just want to point out that although Logan Woodside I don't think went to Western Kentucky. He was offered by Western
that
Kentucky.
Okay,
so yeah. partial count credit. It. That I know more about Logan Woodside than
and
I
Nate,
ever thought
Nate
they
Sudfeld
did.
Is Indiana.
Okay. Indiana? Okay.
And not North
I was in the Big
right,
Ten. I was in the Big Ten. Ten.
In fact, if I remember correctly, did he not play? Would he have played the bowl game? Remember Indiana
and
played?
I was in the right state, too.
Yeah. You were close.
Well, no.
No, close.
Yeah, I was close. Yeah,
Northwestern is outside of Chicago.
Outside of Chicago, yeah.
Yes, so close. I'll give you partial credit. Just I'm like not sure I get partial credit
for that. That's like Nick's system in our take it to the bank. Sometimes he gives points to you guys. I'm not sure how he
y'all
gets
can't give me no points. I was close. I was in the same division.
No points.
The cities are not that far apart. I mean, wasn't that close?
D-Mace, I give you like two.
The colors are
thank
different.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Two or three BI.
Purple and red. They're kind of they're cousins. They're cousins. Purple and red. Six
cousins.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll continue to monitor social media as the cuts roll in around the NFL. The deadline for 53-man rosters is 3 p.m. Central. So far, all we have seen in terms of notable Titans cuts, Caleb Farley released by the Tennessee Titans as reported by many people as I first saw it from Adam Schefter. But as we continue monitoring the NFL, I want to get into the Yaroslav Askarov trade for a moment. Willie sent something over to me that I found to be very interesting from an analyst that has Predators ties as we discuss the fallout from the Yaroslav Askarov trade in an interesting article I read, too, about the aftermath of that trade. We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie and D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier here with you on a Tuesday afternoon as we continue to monitor social media as it relates to NFL cuts, Titans cuts. Anything we see, we will bring it to you. So far, the only cut we have seen as it relates to the Titans is Caleb Farley has been released as a member of the Tennessee Titans. But I wanted to take a quick Titans break to talk about the aftermath of the Yaroslav Askarov trade, because when we were in together late last week, we were talking about what potentially that trade package could look like. Then the trade comes down on Friday with Yaroslav Askarov becoming a member of the San Jose Sharks. So, Willie, you sent this to me from Sportsnet.ca. Jason Bukala works as a prospect analyst for Sportsnet. He is also a former amateur scout for the Nashville Predators.
I don't have the years off the top of my head, but it was a long time.
I think it was like the early 2010s, I want to say, like 2010, 2011. So Bukala has experience with the Predators organization as an amateur scout and now works as a prospect analyst and does work for Sportsnet. So he broke down the trade between the Predators and the Sharks, and Askarov was the headline. But he did mention a couple things about the trade as a whole that I found to be interesting. So there's a section at the bottom that says, who won the trade? Because that's the most important thing whenever we discuss a trade in any capacity. We have to immediately find out who won the trade. And it's not going to be clear who won this trade for a while. We need to see what happens.
Probably like 5 years at least.
Now, if the Predators, now that they are armed with three first-round draft picks, if they turn that third draft pick into a significant player, whether by trade, offer sheet, they draft someone, that adds to the grade, the trade grade. But if we're just looking at the prospects, if we're looking at the two focal points, Askarov and Edstrom, as you said, Willie, it's going to be a few years at least until we know. But this is what Bukala wrote, and I think it's worth discussing. So who won the trade? Both teams did well in this trade, but the risk definitely lies in the hands of the San Jose Sharks, according to Bukala. He also writes, starting NHL goalies are expensive to acquire, and Askarov hasn't established himself yet at this level. Having said that, I believe the Sharks have acquired their goalie of the future. Edstrom, in my opinion, has a bright NHL future ahead of him. He won't move the needle offensively every night, but he will contribute in a variety of ways. He also mentions the future first-round pick. But then he writes, it'll be interesting to see how this trade pans out over the next 3 or 4 years. There's a real chance Nashville comes out on top in the long run. So we heard Barry Trotz on with Jared following the trade last week. Today at The Athletic, Corey Pronman is releasing his pipeline rankings. The Predators, I believe, were number 17. And he had Edstrom ranked as the top prospect in the pipeline based on his criteria.
Which surprised me a little bit.
It did surprise me as well. But according to Corey Pronman, who's a prospect analyst for The Athletic, Edstrom is now, in terms of the I would have to look at the criteria. Because, for example, Luke Evangelista is on his list. I think it has to do with age. I'll have to look at the parameters.
You have to be 22 or under, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are guys excelling at age 21, 22 that are on the list. So that's the distinction in this list,
yes,
as opposed to the players who haven't played in the NHL yet. Like,
yes,
Evangelista and some of the guys who have played a full season are evaluated. But let me just ask you, Adam, you follow this, right? And we discussed it leading up. Based on what we thought the market might be for Askarov and the circumstances, did you think the Predators got decent or, you know, good? How would you grade what they got back? Even though we're not going to know the results of this, because Edstrom is 19,
mm-hmm,
and the guy that they are going to use for this pick is right now a senior in high school, right? He can't even vote yet.
They may not even use the pick on a prospect.
Guy. Right. So this is a long way off before you know what you've got. And Krona, I think, is a guy that they think could end up being an asset down the road. He's only 23. He's still young for a goalie, and he did get thrown to the Wolves last year.
He had bad numbers, but he played
for an awful team.
Which, by the way, is
the team Askarov is right going to. So we'll have to see how the Sharks try to navigate
that.
Now they have
Macklin Celebrini. Now they have Will Smith. I thought the Sharks added some savvy veterans in the offseason, like Tyler Toffoli. So you would presume they will be better. I still expect the Sharks to be one of the worst teams in the NHL this season. But to answer your question, I thought it was good that the Predators recouped a first-round pick in this deal. I thought that was important. And Edstrom, by most accounts, is a good prospect. He was considered the top prospect in the Golden Knights' system when they made the Thomas Hertl trade with the Sharks. Though, to be fair, the Golden Knights' system isn't considered one of the best just because they have traded a ton of either first-round picks or players they've taken with those picks, like Cody Glass, for example. I think Nick Suzuki, who's now the captain, yes, of the Montreal Canadiens, was another one of those players that was it for Pacioretty?
Yeah, Max Pacioretty.
Right. So they've traded a lot of their high-end prospects. So take that for what it's worth. But Edstrom is considered a good prospect. Now, is he the type of prospect that most people who know these sorts of things expect to be, you know, a Connor Bedard, Macklin Celebrini type? Probably not.
Not a game changer.
But he sounds like a guy who could be an everyday player in your middle six, in your second or third line.
And a center, those are harder to find if he stays at center.
Right. So there's a lot to like about this deal. I mean, the fact that the Predators now have that many first-round draft picks. And by the way, we talk about I was as hard on David Poile as most people when near the end of his time with the Predators. I just thought that there were a lot of moves that he made that I didn't agree with. But the move he made to trade Tanner Jeannot to the Tampa Bay Lightning on his way out the door was a masterclass of asset management. I mean, how many draft picks did they get? Five?
Five.
For Jeannot, who's not even on the Lightning anymore. He was traded to the Kings in the offseason. They needed to get rid of him to make salary cap room. And they got a first-round pick out of that.
They have the Lightning's first-round pick this coming season. This next draft.
A really savvy move by David Poile. So to have three first-round draft picks now, I thought that it was important that they got a first-round draft pick. And look, Willie, you and I, we were talking about Kent Johnson last week, if they were going to trade him to the Blue Jackets, a top 10 pick who's pretty established in the NHL. You know, maybe we were thinking too big, but I thought that the Predators, all things considered, did well in these negotiations. And I saw Elliot Freeman put out his 32 Thoughts column the other day and mentioned the other teams that were sniffing around Askarov. He mentioned the Canadiens. He mentioned the Devils. I think there were
Colorado was mystified me. I don't know what Colorado really has to trade.
Right, but there were plenty of teams interested in San Jose. Snapped them up. But there is an interesting story about Askarov today that Willie, you and I, and Derek wanted to discuss by Alex Daugherty in the Tennessean.
Yeah, I saw this pop up, and I think it's a very good insight that I think, because look, I know, and I went on Joe and Robbie's show, and I said it many times on this show. I felt like if Askarov had bought in to the Predators' plan, and that is what the article is about today that Alex did, that is good. You've now got Mitch Korn back in the fold to go with already a great group of people who know about goaltending, right? Pecorine is in the fold. Ben Vanderklok is an outstanding disciple, if you will, of Mitch Korn. He has done a great job with Rene and Saros. Have the Predators ever had bad goaltending? Ever? No. I'll answer it quickly. No. And most years they've had outstanding goaltending. Okay? You've got this great plan that Barry Trotz outlined that they tried to sell Askarov on. Even with the commitment to UC Saros and the signing of Scott Wedgwood, they had a plan. I said all along, if Askarov bought into the plan, he could fit nicely if he were patient for the next couple years and get better, which is the Predators' assessment. And you ask yourself, do the Predators know about goaltending? I think the answer is yes. Does Mitch Korn know about goaltending? Yes. That was their evaluation for the betterment of the franchise and for Askarov, that he's not ready. They tried to sell him on Mitch Korn, Pekka Rinne, Ben Vanderklok, taking your time, you're young. He didn't listen to any of them. That affected how quick they moved Askarov, right? I wanted them, I thought in a perfect world, the best way to go would be to continue to bring Askarov on at his own pace. When he's ready, he's ready. Be the backup. And then his trade value would even go up. And you could wait it out until the perfect phone call came in for the best deal. Do I think they got the best deal they potentially could have? No. They decided to just move on because Askarov decided not to listen to any of those guys, despite the credentials of that group that is got a time-tested, proven success track record of goaltending.
It's not about what they have as far as, you know, the experience and the knowledge of that position. You named them off, Willie. It was this young kid. And again, you know, when this trade initially came down and we talked about it, you know, I said I understand both sides. I understand Askarov's side wanting to play and, you know, thinking that, hey, listen, I am the top or the second top prospect as far as goalies in the AHL. I think who had a better prospect? Was it Detroit?
The Wild had.
Detroit and the Wild each have good guys.
Jesper Waltstedt, is that the goalie for the Wild?
Yeah, who basically are at the same stage of their career with Askarov, and I don't think either one of them is going to play much in the NHL this year. Mm-hmm. Why? Because goaltenders take longer. But Askarov doesn't want to hear that. He says he's ready right now. Okay. Let's see what the Sharks do. They do have two NHL goalies under contract.
They do, but they're not very good.
No,
Mackenzie Blackwood
and Vitek
Vanacek.
The point is, the Sharks aren't going to be very good. If he wants to go out there, will the Sharks put Askarov in there 30, 35 times this year? Maybe. How's that going to go?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think they have no choice but to play him and play him.
Yeah, they're committed now.
Yeah, they committed to him. They know he didn't want to go back to Milwaukee, so they're committed. Barry just didn't want to deal with it. As much knowledge as they have in that building when it comes to goaltending, the young kid didn't want to hear it. He wanted to be in the NHL. And it wasn't the fact, I think, necessarily that he wanted to be in the NHL, because every player that's in, you know, Milwaukee strive to be in the NHL. If you don't, then why are you playing hockey? I think it's the way he went about it. They knew even if they brought him up after that, there was still going to be a problem. There was still going to be friction within the locker room, because he ultimately wants to be a starting goalie, and he was never going to get that chance, at least not within the first 3 or 4 years, unless UC just tanked, which I could never see. The kid wasn't going to see as much time as he wanted to see. So you were, in a sense, you were forced to move him. But it may have been the best thing for the organization. And Barry has always said from day one, I love the players. I want to do right by them. But I need to do right by this organization first. First and foremost, that is my responsibility, the organization. So if that is indeed the case, as much talent as this kid has, if he's causing a stink, you got to move him. And you just may not get what you exactly want. But I think they probably got close to it. But the big thing is they got rid of a malcontent. He's gone somewhere else. Hopefully he does well there, but they couldn't deal with it in they couldn't deal with it as a franchise considering where they believe they're headed. They got a team that can truly believe they can compete, not just for a playoff spot, but ultimately for a Stanley Cup. And they don't need the interruption or the friction from a guy that hadn't played in the NHL much. They don't need it. So what do? You just move him somewhere else where you feel he can sort of flourish in the fashion that he wants to.
In conjunction with that trade, the Sharks signed Askarov to a two-year contract with, a $2 million cap hit that takes effect next season.
Yeah, so they've got him for, what, $925
yes, this year? Yes, he's on his entry-level deal. But this was something that was interesting to me. So this is from Sheng Peng, who's a reporter in San Jose. Mike Greer, the Sharks GM, says they've laid out expectations slash plans to Askarov and his agent. Says he expects there to be no issue if it so happens that the Sharks want Askarov to report to the AHL to start the season.
Which is what I think they're going to do. I would be very surprised if he is the opening night
backup or starter.
Goal. Yeah. Well, because if he's opening night backup, that doesn't make any sense. He needs to play, which is what the Predators told him.
Right.
You need to play 60 games or so. We'll get you some games. This is what Alex's article, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean, lays out very well. Some quotes from Barry Trotz. We spent hours. Mm-hmm. We have a plan. We have one of the greatest goaltending developers of all time that is in your corner. We want you to get better. This is the best thing for you. I will bet you that the Sharks' plan is not that different this year than what the Predators' plan is. Are they going to throw him to the Wolves and get lit up? The Sharks have a bad team. They're rebuilding. They're super young. They're not going to be very good.
But you know what? You know what's different? His path. His path to becoming a starter.
Yes. Yeah, there which is why no, now all of a sudden no he's going to decide he's going to behave now.
There wasn't a path for immediate
right. That's ultimately what it was. No question.
For him. There is a path. Yes. So you're right. He'll go down to Milwaukee, but he knows that they're going to bring me back up. He has a feeling in his mind, the path to get to where I want to go is easier in San Jose than it is in Nashville.
Right. He actually gets to play in the same building because the AHL team is called the Barracuda, and they play in the same
They play
shark
in
tank.
The Shark Tank. There have been many times where the Predators will have
a shark or a Barracuda. Which one?
I mean, it's like one shark versus 10 barracuda. It depends on what you're talking about.
A little baby
about numbers.
Shark. Yeah. A little baby shark.
Yes.
Yeah.
But don't say baby shark around someone who has a 3-year-old child. But there have been plenty of times. There have been plenty of times where the Predators will have their morning skate at the Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And then that afternoon, the Barracuda will play an afternoon game. An AHL game before the Predators play the Sharks in the evening.
I have seen times where we've been over there that the Predators will be in their locker room getting ready for the game, and the Barracuda players will be in the locker room right down the hall getting ready for their practice or game that's going on right now.
Okay,
it's really
I ask
odd
you
setup.
Yes.
Is it Barracuda or Barracudas?
Good question.
I feel like it's plural with an S. I feel like it's plural with an S.
Well, because in the WNBA.
Nick, help us out here, grammar.
In the WNBA.
Two Barracuda or two Barracudas?
I believe it's just Barracuda.
Because in the WNBA, they just got singular names.
The plural of the word Barracuda is indeed Barracudas.
Okay, so there is an S. Okay.
So actually, are they the Webster? What is that?
Actually, according to Merriam-Webster, it could be both. It says Barracuda or Barracudas.
Ooh,
so I guess
either or.
It's
okay.
An either or situation. But that is something that works to Askarov's advantage. Even if he's in the American League, he's still playing in the same arena. He can still live in the same apartment or house or whatever.
And as Derek pointed out, this is where now his attitude is going to be better because he doesn't have to cry and whine. He sees the pathway, and he's probably going to be a little more patient because he immediately becomes their number one prospect to goalie. There's nothing standing in his way, with all due respect to Mackenzie Blackwood and Vanacek.
Neither of whom are the long-term answer. They're placeholders at best for the San Jose Sharks. 615-737-1025. If you have any thoughts about the return for the Yaroslav Askarov trade or anything of that nature, let us know. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to monitor cuts around the NFL. I just saw one that popped up. The Chiefs have cut Kadarius Toney. He was very much offside, and now he's gone. Kadarius Toney cut by the New England Patriots. The Kansas City Chiefs will continue to monitor.
Talented guy.
Very talented.
Hasn't put it all together.
No. as with most people who get cut on this day. 615-737-1025. Adam Vinken, Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, 1025-1063, The Game.
Well, Adam's day's wrecked. That's going to be in his head the rest of the day.
Man.
I've watched a lot of youth baseball games where my son's playing and everybody's little brother and sister are off to the side. And this song is playing on a loop throughout.
It's got 14 billion views on YouTube.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's crazy.
It never ends.
It's up there with Shakira.
Shakira ain't got nothing on Baby Shark.
That's what I'm saying.
It's bad, bringing me bad vibes. I come here to get away from Baby Shark. Ben on the text line said, Nick, I double dog dare you to come back from the break with Baby Shark. So
there we go.
Ben, you got your wish.
Been conspiring behind our backs.
It's not his favorite. It's not my son's favorite, but like most kids, he hears it. You know, there are multiple versions of it. There are remixes galore. So if I've heard it once, I've heard it many times. But Ben, this is a throwback to an old segment from this show, but you just made the list
by requesting that.
Ben now says he needs to send us all cookies. Well, if you're sending us cookies, then it's fine to play Baby Shark. That's all I'm going to say. Then we have an unnamed texter who says whosever idea it was to play that song should suffer for eternity. No cookies for you, unnamed texter. But there is another text I found to be interesting here as we wrap up our discussion on the Yaroslav Skarov trade with the San Jose Sharks the Predators made late last week. Randy on the text line says, well, this is a different text, but I'll read it anyway. Randy says, my only issue with what the Predators received in this trade, you keep saying it'll be 5 years before we know about them. It just keeps reminding me that I'll be 70 before we know it. So I'm sorry to remind you about how old you are. But this is the text that I wanted to get to from Brian. He says, curious to see how teams will go at Askarov. He reminds me a bit of a young Ron Hextall. Great goalie, but if you screw with him and get his temper going, it will get him off of his game. So that's what I wanted to discuss.
This is what I and my colleagues in the Predator circles have discussed for a long time since Askarov has come into the mix, and we've learned about his charisma, right? Because it is very unconventional. The brand, and I think I am told he is all about the brand. It's not just, hey, this is how I am. Because I do think it's authentic, right? What makes him is the swagger, right? It's his greatest strength and maybe a weakness as well. Only time will tell. But how will that play? The bench pressing of the goal, the slamming the goal down, the undisciplined plays sometimes, the risky plays that he has the talent to make. How will that play at the next level? Will he have to tone it down, or will it be an asset for him? Because there are a lot of people, and I think you guys would agree, there are a lot of fans that desperately want somebody like that to succeed because it shakes things up. It's fun. It's different, right, from a fan standpoint. But there is that old guard, and this is probably in every sport, there's this battle that goes on, but especially in hockey. I'd say hockey, as much as any sport, is trying to suppress players that have that gene in them. Is that fair to say? And I wonder how that has been viewed for a long time within the organization. Because I would say this. I'm totally okay if a guy wants to act like he acts, right? If you can back it up and you want to be like that and that is natural for you, I'm okay with that if your work ethic and your quality as a teammate and your attitude behind the scenes is good. What I don't like is if he does that and he's a bad teammate, and that I think is what really how he handled himself during the playoffs last year. I do think that was an issue, right? When he got benched, I think a lot of that was when you act the way he did and do all the charisma stuff, that's when people are like, oh, man, what is this guy? What is his substance really deep down?
It's if you aren't playing to the caliber of your antics, then that's when people have a problem. Like, if you're doing a scarf, all the stuff that he's doing, and listen, you want a player to be able to show his personality. We've heard Brian Callahan talk about it, you know, guys having an attitude, because he talked about Mason Kinsey and his own personality. You want a guy to be able to do that, because when a guy is able to do that, the true player comes out. He can play within a comfort. But in doing that, you better be able to play big, because if you're not playing big, that stuff gets very old very quickly.
And do your teammates have your back?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Because you know you could be put in a position in a game where a guy starts doing that, the other team challenges him, and then what do your teammates do?
Exactly.
They back you up, and they're like, oh, man, here he goes again. Mm-hmm. He's ticked off the other team here, or he just took a bad penalty. So I think that's the essential question. Do his teammates have his back and really believe in him and say, okay, we'll go with you?
Didn't he take a penalty in a game before, Askarov?
Oh, yeah.
A goalie?
He took a huge penalty in the playoffs.
That's what I was
in
thinking.
The game that he eventually got benched in and lost the job for.
How do you get a penalty as a goalie?
He tackled a guy. He clotheslined him and threw him down. It's on.
What was the official call? Was it cross-checking?
I don't know what they called it.
How many cross-checking penalties have goalies taken?
That's what I'm saying. Right. Like,
He lost his cool, and he snapped.
I think he's going to be awesome.
I think he should grow out of a lot of this stuff.
Maybe he's going to have his growing pains because of his sort of bravado and sort of, you know, look at me attitude. But I think the kid's going to be great. I think the kid's going to be pretty good. But I think Barry did what was best for the organization, and that was to move him on. You don't want a malcontent sitting in a locker room with the team that you're putting together to ultimately try to win a Stanley Cup. This team doesn't have the big-time, you know, flat-out scores that some other teams may have that can probably overcome a lot of noise. They play as a team. They got some really damn good players, but they play as a team. And when you're playing as a team, you don't need a link in that chain that's not pulling their weight or that's causing some type of confusion within a locker room. They can't afford it. Barry don't like it. So what do? You move on from the individual. You wish him well, but your main priority is to do what's best for the Nashville Predators, and I believe that's what Barry did.
To Willie's point about Askarov and his personality and how it will play in the dressing room, it'll be interesting to see if he does stick with the Sharks, what a lot of losing will do, because they're probably going to lose a lot as a team. He didn't do a lot of losing. The Milwaukee Admirals haven't done a lot of losing these past few years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that, as Derek knows full well, losing a lot can really change someone. It could exacerbate certain issues.
That's a good point, because that stuff doesn't play well. Like, we all know the guy that scores the touchdown in the fourth quarter and does the big dance, you're like, dude, you're down 35-7.
What are you doing?
You know, like, that's where you get into that. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think Askarov is going to change, right, with that part of it, right? He should grow out of a lot of these things, and hopefully he'll have a better scope for when to do it and when not. But that's a great question you're bringing up, Adam, is if you're playing for a team, and they are rebuilding, right? It's going to take a few years for them. In a few years, they've got a lot of pieces, high first-round picks that they hope will all mature, and they'll start to win. We found out the last 4 or 5 years that it's not easy to do the full breakdown. It takes a lot more time than I think people want to believe to do a full rebuild in exchange for getting the high first-round picks, which is what the Sharks have done. But it's going to be a while before they're a really good team.
They lost 63 games last season.
They're arguably the worst team in the salary cap era. Fair?
Yes. I would include that Avalanche team from, what year was that? It was like right when Jared Bednar first got to Colorado. That was a really bad team before they got to where they are.
Unfortunately,
now,
the Nathan MacKinnons and Cale McCart, the guys that they got, sped up their process. They rebuilt faster than some. But they hit rock bottom.
Even though Askarov is gone, Predators fans will be keeping an eye on it, because they want to see. I mean, they learned to love him while he was a member of the organization. Perhaps that's no longer the case, but we're going to be monitoring what he does because we want to see if the Predators made the right choice. But as you said, Willie, it's probably going to be at least a few years before we can really definitively say which of the teams won the trade. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the NFL and the Titans coming up next. We're continuing to monitor the waiver wire here as teams make cuts ahead of the 3 p.m. Central deadline. Nothing to report on the Titans as of yet other than the news that we got at the start of the show. Caleb Farley cut by the Tennessee Titans reportedly. We'll continue to look for that as well. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, Willie Donick, 1025-1063, The Game.